Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, episode 62, with Sarah Kornack and Beth Ann Schwamberger. Today on the show, we're talking with Ruth Sukup of the blog Living Well, Spending Less. Today is the launch day for Ruth's new book, Living Well, Spending Less, 12 Secrets to the Good Life. I have had a chance to read her book and I really enjoyed it. It is full of lots of great practical advice. Today on the podcast, we talk with Ruth about her new book, and we talk with her about her blogging for profit book. We discuss self-publishing versus traditional publishing. We discuss family life and Pinterest. We cover it all. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode, so let's get started.
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
Today on the podcast, we are so excited to welcome Ruth Sukup. Ruth blogs about living the good life on a budget at livingwellspendingless.com. Ruth is the author of the best-selling book, How to Blog for Profit Without Selling Your Soul, and her newest book, Living Well, Spending Less, 12 Secrets of the Good Life, is available today if you're listening on this podcast air date at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and major booksellers nationwide. Ruth is also founder of the online course Elite Blogging Academy. Her greatest passion is her family and creating a home filled with joy and purpose. Welcome to the show, Ruth.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Ruth, could you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your family, but then also about how you got started blogging?
Sure. Well, I live in Florida with my husband and two little girls, Maggie and Annie. They are 8 and 5. And I got started blogging back in 2010, not because I wanted to be a blogger or anything like that. I had never even really been on blogs before, but I like to shop. And so my husband and I were fighting a lot about money because I was spending a lot more than I should have. So we got in one really big fight one day and decided to take some drastic measures. And so he put me on a really strict budget. And all of a sudden I didn't know quite what to do with myself because kind of my fallback was going to Target and, you know, wandering around with my kids. My kids were little at the time, 1 and 4. And we had just moved back to Florida from Washington. I was really missing a lot of my friends and support system up there, my family. And so it was just like my way of killing time was going to the mall or going to Target and just wandering around. And so I didn't know what else to do with myself, but I knew I needed to find a way to hold myself accountable. So one of my friends had sent me a link to a blog and she's like, oh, if I ever had time, I would do this. I would do something like this. I'm like, oh, this is really cute. I could do this. I could start a blog. So I started this blog called Living Well, Spending Less, and I had no idea what I was doing, and I realized very quickly going into it that there was this whole world of blogs out there that I had never even heard of before, and it was this whole community. It was like this secret world opened up to me, and it was really cool. And then I realized that there were people who were doing it full-time as a job, and so pretty early on, I set that goal for myself and told my husband, I think I'm going to do this. I'm going to be a blogger and make enough money so that you can quit your job. And he thought that was the stupidest thing that I had ever said. And told me that multiple times, that is so dumb. You can't make money from a blog. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And that was kind of how I got started. And, you know, it took a long time from there, but that was the beginning. So there was no there was no noble beginning. It was just sort of, I fell into it because I was spending too much money and it grew from there.
I love your story. And I love the fact that even when your husband and even other friends were telling you that this was stupid and it wasn't going to work out, but you kept going for several years until it became something that generated an income. So I just love that you stuck with it.
Yeah, I mean, I tell people that too, and I have this Elite Blog Academy now, so I have lots and lots of students who are going through it, and we talk about that a lot, and I think sometimes you just have to believe in yourself, and when everybody else is telling you that what you're doing is dumb and stupid and it doesn't make any sense, which a lot of people don't understand blogging, they don't understand this world, it's still very new, it's easy to get discouraged and it's easy to give up. So that's one of those things where I try to encourage people. Because for me, the encouragement that I had when I first started was I read the book Pro Blogger. Mm-hmm. So Darren Rousey, who has the website problogger.net, he had also written a book called Pro Blogger, Blog Your Way to a Six-Figure Income, I think was the name of it. And I will tell you what, I read that book like at least 50 times in the first 6 months that I was blogging. I would just read it and then read it again and then read it again. And every time my husband would look at me, he'd be like, are you reading that stupid book again? And it was like he was my voice of reason, or my voice of encouragement, Darren was. When everybody else was telling me it was stupid, I was like, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. Darren says I can do it, so I'm going to do it. And you know, I just kept reading it over and over again, and it really did. That was what kept me going, I think, in those early days. And it's so funny because I actually got a chance to meet Darren last summer. He was in Portland, Oregon, so I flew across the country just so that I could meet him because he lives in Australia normally. So I figured Portland, Oregon was closer than Australia. And I just wanted to shake his hand and tell him how much that his book had meant to me. And we ended up having a cup of coffee, and he is such a great guy. He was so nice, even though I was a complete spaz when I met him. And completely starstruck. I don't think I've ever been starstruck in my entire life except for when I met Darren Rousey. But it was just like, you know, he was that voice of reason for me. And I love now that I have that opportunity to be the voice for other people saying, you can do this, even when everybody else is telling them to quit.
Would you say that his book is still one of your favorite business books, or do you find yourself turning to another business book now that you're more established?
Yeah, I would say his is a classic, and I loved it. Like, it had such an impact on me. One of the reasons I wrote my book later, How to Blog for Profit, was not because I wanted to compete with his book at all, was because I did feel like his book was more geared towards the mail or tech blogging genre. And I wanted to have something that was a little bit more geared towards women and the kind of mom blog, women's blog type niche. And so, you know, because I think they definitely focus on two different things and get audiences from different areas a little bit. And there's, of course, always going to be some overlap. But yeah, I would say that's definitely one of my favorite books. Some other books, probably the most other impactful book for me has been Eat That Frog by Brian Tracy. So that one is just, it's about avoiding procrastination and always tackling your biggest and hardest task first thing in the morning. And that one has made such an impact for me. And I think that no one thing has changed my life more than adopting that philosophy of just doing the hard stuff first and getting it over with and continually working on those long-term projects.
I love that advice. Sarah's read Eat That Frog, and I've skimmed it, and I think she's much better at following that advice.
You should read it. It's an easy read. It's an easy read, and it is such a life-changing book. I love that one.
Yeah, I totally need to, because even when we work together, Sarah's always like, come on, Bethann, come on, let's just do this. Let's do this first.
I don't always eat my frog, though. I mean, everyone has their moments.
Yeah.
And they put stuff off, and everyone has their different things, but it's true that you do feel so much better, and then the rest of your day is so much more productive when you get that frog down early in the morning.
That is very true. Have you ever read The Power of Habit? That one is by Charles Duhigg, I think.
I haven't read that one.
It is really good, too. That one combined with Eat That Frog, I think both, I got different things out of both of them, but The Power of Habit talks about creating good routines for yourself and how it takes a different part of your brain to do something that is routine versus something that's new. And everybody has a limited amount of discipline every day. And so the more you can create good habits for yourself, the less you're using up that reserve of discipline, and the more you'll have more discipline for other things. And so it's all about doing the same thing every single day in a routine in order to kind of extend your discipline, if that makes any sense. So I thought that one was really interesting, too. I actually talk about that a little bit in my upcoming book, The Living Well, Spending Less, 12 Secrets of the Good Life.
I was going to mention that because we signed up for your launch team, so I've been able to read most of your new book
so far.
And I'm enjoying it. I like your new spin on the topics that you address in your book. I'm really enjoying it so far. So
that's
and
good.
Habits are definitely, that's a bad
part for me. I feel like I don't have those habits and routines established. So actually, after reading that chapter in your book, I went and wrote down what my morning routine is going to be and what my evening routine is going to be.
Oh.
And I asked my husband, Mike, and I said, okay, this is what I'd like to do. Will you help me do this? Because I think you mentioned in your book getting help on accountability. And he said, sure, I'll help you with that. So it's on my fridge right now.
Awesome. I love that. That's great. And it's one of those things, too, that you just have to keep at, because your bad habits are always going to be kind of ingrained in your brain. And so even once you've tried to reset them, it's really easy to fall back on bad habits. I fall back on bad habits all the time. I'm just going to keep it real there.
Well, the true test will be, how I'm doing in a couple weeks here, because today was literally day number one.
Oh.
I talked to him last night, but I did follow through with morning routine.
That's
so
awesome.
We'll see December 30th when your book launches,
if I'm
still doing
it. You'll have to give a little follow-up.
So speaking of your new book, can you tell us a little more about it and what advice it includes and how it will help other moms listening?
Living Well, Spending Less is 12 Secrets of the Good Life. So it talks, a lot of people think it's just a personal finance book, but it goes a lot deeper than that, because I kind of explore the idea of what is the good life? What does that mean? And how do we create that life that we've always wanted? I think for me, I always had in my head this idea that the good life was, you know, kind of the celebrity lifestyle, flying around on private jets and having a giant house and the best cars and the best clothes and all of that stuff that we see everywhere. You know, I'm like people.com addict. I don't know why. I don't even watch TV, but for whatever reason, I have to read people.com every day. And I read about these celebrities who I don't even know who they are, because I don't listen to music and I don't watch TV. And yet I am like compulsively drawn to this website. But you go on there and you see like what all these people have, and we think, oh, well, that's what you need to be successful or to have the good life. And we have this idea that the good life is all the stuff that we have, because that's what the marketers want you to think. That's what the retailers want you to think. That's what everybody who's making money off of you wants you to think. But I kind of go more in depth into that and realize and talk about my own realization through really praying for change, was that the good life has nothing to do with those things. It's not so much about what we have as who we are as people. And so then, you know, if that's true, then what does that mean? What are the secrets of the good life? And for me, it's, you know, a life rich with family, friends, but also with discipline and with, you know, having control over my finances and my spending. Like I said before, that's something that I've really struggled with. And I found that once I started to get control over that aspect of my life, it carried over into so many other aspects of my life as well. So each chapter kind of goes through a different secret of the good life. And, you know, it goes from very practical goal setting tips to saving money on groceries to setting a budget, and then talking more about contentment, and decluttering is one of the things we talk about in the book. So it's lots of different areas, but kind of all around that theme of what is the good life and how do we get it for ourselves.
Ruth, Living Well, Spending Less is being published by Zondervan, but you self-published Blogging for Profit.
Yep.
Could you talk us through the pros and the cons and the tips of publishing via each method?
Sure. I have to say, I really enjoy both processes, but it's very, very different. To give you an idea of how traditional publishing works, it's very, very slow. I first started working on my proposal for Living Well, Spending Less, 12 Secrets of the Good Life, which had a totally different title at the time when it was a proposal. But that whole concept started in January of 2013. So almost 2 years ago now. And so I worked on my proposal, which that took several months. And then my agent started working on pitching it to different publishing houses. And that whole process from writing the proposal to pitching it and then, you know, talking with different publishers and stuff, that probably took about 6 months. So from the time that I gave the finished proposal to my agent to start pitching it, then I suddenly had like all this nervous energy. And so I was like, well, what am I going to do with myself, you know, while I'm waiting for her to, you know, talk to all these publishers. So I'm like, well, why don't I just, you know, write all this blogging stuff down, because people, my readers have been asking. I don't really blog about blogging on Living Well, Spending Less. It's never, that's, it's not about that, but a lot of readers knew that I was doing it as a full-time job. And a lot of my friends knew I was doing it as a full-time job and were wondering, you know, what are you doing? How are you doing this? And can you tell us how to do it too? So I'm like, I'll just write all this stuff down and put it in an ebook, and then I can just, you know, put that aside. And anytime somebody asks, then I can just give them this ebook. And then, and that's all I was really planning to do with it. So I think it took me about 3 months to write out How to Blog for Profit and the whole book. And then right as I was finishing up the manuscript for How to Blog for Profit, then I finally heard back from some publishers and I got some, you know, offers for a book deal. And I ended up signing with Zondervan because it was a 2-book deal. It was a great book deal. And then I went ahead and self-published How to Blog for Profit on Amazon using KDP Select or KDP. And then I started working. So after I published that, then I started working on my manuscript for Living Well, Spending Less, 12 Secrets of the Good Life. And I turned that in last January, I think. And so now I've just been waiting since last January for it to actually come out in stores. So it is a long process. So by the time it actually comes out, it'll be about 2 years. And then if you look at How to Blog for Profit in that time, so I started working on it afterwards, after that, and it's already come out with a second edition this year in the time that I've been working on. So just that, you know, the comparison of the two is that self-publishing is much faster. There's a much faster turnaround. One of the reasons that I wanted to self-publish How to Blog for Profit was for the reason that it was quicker. You know, if I was to wait 2 years to get a blogging book out to market, everything would have changed. The reason I added a second edition was because I needed to change some things in the first edition that were no longer relevant. It's a world that changes so fast that I don't think it's probably the right book to do in a traditional publishing format, just because I like to have the control to know that I can change it whenever I want to. Does that make sense?
Definitely. That makes perfect sense. And I'm just so impressed that you submitted your proposal and then you're like, what am I going to do with my free time right now? And you rewrote another book. That's awesome. I love that.
And, you know, and it's funny too, because that, like I said, that was never sort of a field that I intended to go into, was becoming this blogging expert and helping people build their blogs. But I really enjoy the business side of blogging. I always have enjoyed the business side of blogging. I think I have a business person's heart. And, you know, I'm always testing things. I'm always trying new things. I'm always trying to figure things out. I love figuring out ways to work smarter, not harder. And so I think I was just naturally suited to that. And I, you know, from writing How to Blog for Profit, then I ended up doing a lot of consulting with people, and doing consulting, I found that bloggers were wanting to know the same things over and over again. They were wanting to know step by step, how do I do this? How do I make this work? Tell me how, first, you know, how do I refine my message so that I know what I'm presenting is the right message for me, it's the right message for my audience, and it's a message that the world wants to hear. And then from there, how do I grow my audience, and how do I create this awesome content, but then how do I get people to read it? Where do I find more readers, and how do I grow that? And from there it goes into how do I monetize that platform that I've built up? Okay, so now I've got great content and I've got a few readers, but I'm not making any money. So how do I do that? And from there it goes into how do I grow my business, and how do I stop looking at myself as a blogger but as an entrepreneur? And so that's what my course does, Elite Blog Academy, just goes really thoroughly, step by step, all those steps.
Awesome. So Ruth, can you tell us a little bit more about how you promoted How to Blog for Profit Without Selling Your Soul? Because it clearly has become a bestseller, and almost every other person we interview on the podcast actually recommends your book.
Oh, that's so nice.
It's true.
It's very true. As you know, as just that the best resource for blogging and growing your blog. So can you talk a little bit more about how you promoted that book?
You know, that's a really funny thing, like, because I love promoting and launches and marketing and all of that different kind of stuff. But when it came to that book, because it was so outside of my normal niche, I honestly didn't have like a huge plan of what I was going to do going into it and how I was going to promote it. I was kind of one of those things where I was just going to write it and then be done with it. And what happened was once it did come out, I talked to a publicist who specializes in ebooks. Her name was Ashley Buffa, and she gave me some really good advice. She said that we were going to, in order to have it hit the top 100 on Amazon, we needed to do kind of a blitz attack on the first day. So we published the book and did kind of a soft publish where she's like, don't tell anybody, don't even tell your friends. Just the only people you want to tell are you need to get 40 people to review your book because it needs to have at least 25 reviews on Amazon. So if you ask 40 people, then at least 25 of them will probably end up giving the reviews on Amazon. So I, you know, on my blog, I host this Thrifty Thursday link up every week. And so I have a list of bloggers that we email every Thursday to let them know that the link up is live. And so I'm like, well, I guess I could just send an email to those people, my Thrifty Thursday people, and see if any of them would be interested in reviewing my book. So that was kind of my first clue that people might be interested in the book, because I sent out this email and I was like hoping against hope that 40 people would volunteer to review this book for free. And I said, well, the first, you know, first 25 people to send me an email, I'll send you a review copy of the book for free. And I instantly had, I think there was only at that time, there was probably only about 500 people on that list, 500 bloggers. And I instantly had like 200 responses of people wanting to review the book. So I knew that if I could get 200 out of 500 people in the first 5 minutes, it was probably a pretty good market for it. And so we sent out the review copies and did that. And so then we set the launch date for, I think it was for September 25th. And the plan was to have a few people talk about it on their blogs, the people that were reviewing. If they wanted to review it on their blog, they could do that. And I had a couple bigger bloggers that wanted to talk about it on their blog. And then we joined, I think, BookBub. We got accepted to BookBub. So it was all timed to happen on the very same day. And so that was on September 25th. And then on that day when it launched, we put it like a sale price, you know, the introductory price, and then launched it. And I did a blog post about it. And then other people blogged about it. And then I think the real clincher for me was that I was in a lot of different Facebook groups of bloggers. And I just mentioned, hey, I wrote this book. It's going to be on sale today if you want to grab it. And then, you know, the reviews had already come in and the reviews were really, really good. And people started talking about it. And then from there, it just, I think it ended up hitting number 14 on the Amazon main list. And it was number one in its category for probably a good year. And I don't think it's number one in the blogs and blogging category anymore. But it was definitely up there for about a year. And it just kind of grew from there. You know, it consistently now, I think it usually stays about in the top 10 in the blogging category, and just word of mouth. I think people just talk about it. It's one of those books where it really is helpful. And so, and there's nothing, I talk about this in my Elite Blog Academy too. There's nothing better than great content for getting great content shared. You know, like people want to talk about the stuff that really helps them.
I love that. And we can definitely speak from experience that word of mouth marketing is still working for that book. So
that's good to know.
Yes. And not to mention, because I'm always on Amazon looking for books on blogging or podcasting or, you know, growing a business online. And your book consistently shows up as, you know, recommended, as, aww, you know, other people who, you know, who bought this book also like this one. So yes, it's recommended all the time, which is great.
Well, what Ashley explained to me, and I didn't know this before, and she's very brilliant when it comes to that kind of Kindle and ebook marketing. But if you can get your book to the top 100 on Amazon, which is why you want to do it all at once, then they will kind of take notice of your book and they will take over the marketing. So they'll be added to things where they like email people who buy similar books. And Amazon, you know, Amazon is the most powerful retailer in the world, and they really, really know what they're doing. So if you can get them to notice your book and notice that it's doing well, then they'll kind of take over the marketing for you and make your job a lot easier. So I think that's happened to some extent.
Definitely. Do you have any idea based on, you know, working with your ebook launch strategist on maybe, I know she said you needed 40 reviews right off the bat in Amazon, but did she have a number in terms of sales that you needed on Amazon in like that first day or that first week that would really launch you into the top 100?
No, she didn't give me an exact number. I think on that first day we sold maybe 1,400 copies, but I know that it really depends on what other books are happening. It's very much, it's all relative related. If there's, you know, it's during a slow time and there's not very many books happening right then it might be easier. If it's a busy time, you might have to sell 3,000 books to make the top 100. So I really, honestly, I don't know if there's an exact number.
You mentioned BookBub. I haven't heard of that before. What does that do?
BookBub is a book list that goes out every day. And I think they have like a million people on their email list, maybe even more now. And all they do every single day is provide a list of the books that are on special, but you have to be approved for them. And they're very selective about who they pick to go on there. And there'll be different books in different categories, and you can customize the email that you have sent to your inbox every day based on the genres that you're interested in. So if you only want to get books about nonfiction, they'll send you the nonfiction deals every day. So it's just a very big book buyers list, but it's very, very powerful.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more about your Elite Blogging Academy. Okay. How did you go about developing this course? I mean, I guess I'm just looking at it from an amateur's perspective. It sounds like it would take so much planning and development and, you know, kind of working with a team to develop this. Could you walk us through a little bit of that process?
Sure. It's funny how it all sort of came about. Originally, I had thought that I would maybe write a follow-up book to How to Blog for Profit, because there was a lot of people that I was meeting that weren't necessarily interested in making money on their blog, but they wanted to build a platform. And I would hear that a lot because I go to a lot of writing conferences in addition to blogging conferences, because I'm obviously a writer as well as a blogger. So I have found that writing conferences are very different from blogging conferences, and that market or that kind of genre is a lot different, where authors don't necessarily aspire to be bloggers. But then they go to these writing conferences and they find out that in order to become a writer these days, you have to have a platform. It's pretty much required by publishers. They will hardly look at you unless you have a platform to start from. It's very, very, very important. And so it's frustrating for a lot of these writers who have never, you know, have no idea how to get started to know, you know, what do I do to build a platform? And so I thought, well, maybe I'll, you know, write a follow-up book that is called How to Build a Platform Without Selling Your Soul. And that way it won't be so like such a turnoff to people who don't care about making money on their blog. Because I find that sometimes, even though only probably half my book is about actually monetizing your blog, that the title, because it says How to Blog for Profit, does definitely turns people off. But then I really started thinking about it even more and realized that because of all the consulting that I was doing, that people just had the same questions over and over again, which was just, how do I do this step by step? Will you just show me step by step, what do I have to do to build a successful blog? And so I kind of based Elite Blog Academy on the same chapters that I have in How to Blog for Profit, but it goes every single unit, there's 12 units in the course, and every single unit goes way, way, way more in depth. And every unit has, you know, multiple assignments that you do, so it's very hands-on. And yes, it was a lot of work to develop the course. It took as probably even longer than it took me to actually write How to Blog for Profit. It probably took me twice as long to develop the curriculum for the course. And then once I developed the curriculum, then I had to write the scripts for the videos. And then we had to film all the videos because every unit has its own video. And then we had to set up the website, and then we had to set up all the email system that goes with it and the shopping cart system that goes with it and all the technical stuff that I have no idea how to do. And so, yes, I definitely had a team of people helping me get all that stuff done. And I would say that the development of the course probably took about 9 months before it was ready to go. So it was definitely a big investment of time and money. I mean, it was by far the biggest financial investment I've made into my business so far, was developing the course.
I just noticed on your website that you're already booked and people have to get on a waiting list. So I'm assuming that people are enjoying your course. And
yes, we launched in September for the fall semester, and we were just blown away by the response. I was expecting to maybe enroll 100 students, and we ended up enrolling 700 our first time, which was max capacity, at least for the first time around, you know, just because it's kind of our beta group. And so they're actually going through the class right now, and the feedback has just been incredible with this first group. I mean, they have been sharing their stories, their success stories. We have a community forum that they can connect in. And it is amazing. People have seen, in just 2 months, they've seen double and triple numbers in their traffic growth and their income growth. So really, really amazing stuff. And we're only halfway through the curriculum right now. So people are just really getting a lot out of the course so far, which is really cool to see.
That's wonderful. So speaking of your academy, and, you know, that's just amazing that your students are seeing such incredible results. You clearly know how to grow a blog or grow a platform. Can you share with us a few of the ways that you've grown your blog the most?
Absolutely. There's a lot of different ways that I've grown my blog in the time that I've started. And I honestly feel like things sort of go in waves. And so that's what I try to tell my students from the very beginning and explain, because I think sometimes I had definitely had a few students who took my course thinking I was going to share some magic secret bullet that was going to change everything for them. And I had to break it to them gently that there is no magic bullet when it comes to blogging, that there are a lot of things that you can do, but the biggest thing that you are going to always have to do is work hard. And it is hard work to do this. And, you know, I think that everything that you do is always going to come back to great content. So it has to start with having fantastic content. And that's always been, I've always loved to write. I am a writer at heart. I always thought when I was a kid I would be a writer someday. I always wanted to write a book. So blogging was very natural to me from that standpoint, because I just love, love, love writing. And I've always really worked on providing just really excellent content that helps the reader solve a problem, that, you know, is providing value to the reader. And I want to be giving my readers the things that are going to enrich their lives. And I think when you start from that point where you're just doing things that are genuinely helping the people that you're serving and the people that are coming to your blog, then I think that you can't go wrong. And that any platform or any social media, or despite how things change, it's always going to come back to having really great content. But that said, when I first started blogging, SEO, search engine optimization, was really big. So I learned everything I possibly could about search engine optimization, and I read every book I possibly could and really wanted to learn everything I could possibly know about how to optimize my site for good search engine results. And so I did, and, you know, optimized every post every single time and over and over and over again, even when everybody else was telling me it was stupid. And even when there was like four people reading my blog, I was optimizing every single thing for search engines so that, you know, at some point, maybe Google would take notice and people would start searching and end up finding my blog. Well, about 6 months after I started my blog, the show Extreme Couponing came out on TLC. I don't know if you remember that show. It came out in 2011, and I had just happened to have written a series called The Beginner's Guide to Coupons, and I had, of course, optimized it for all of these coupon keywords, and it hadn't really gone anywhere at the beginning, but when Extreme Couponing came out, suddenly everybody was searching for how to use coupons, and my blog post came up first, or my series came up first. And suddenly I went from having no traffic to having, you know, 5,000 people a day on my site, which was huge for me. And that was kind of when I experienced my first big spike in traffic. And then, you know, then it kind of tapered off. It went up and then it kind of tapered off and it continued to grow. And it kind of stayed steady for probably another year and a half. And I would use a little bit of Facebook and a lot of Google and stuff. And then I started using Pinterest, and I sort of stumbled upon this strategy of pinning that really helped grow my blog. And when Pinterest got big, then that was another huge spike for me in traffic. And I found that my page views went from 100,000 a month to over 1 million a month in about 3 months just because of Pinterest. And that was great. And then it sort of again leveled off again, and I kind of stayed at that higher level. And then, you know, I went through a phase where Facebook was really big and my Facebook page just took off and things were great. So I suddenly went from getting, you know, 30,000 people a day to getting usually about 50,000 people a day or even more. And then that sort of leveled off. And, you know, so every step along the way, there's been different things that have helped grow my traffic. And I think part of blogging is being aware of the different areas and always never putting all your eggs in one basket, but also just learning how to ride the waves as they come. And, you know, when Facebook crashed, I wasn't devastated by it. It was a bummer when Facebook crashed for me, but it was one of those things where I was just grateful that I was able to take advantage of it while it lasted and then focus on growing other things. Does that make sense?
Definitely. So we have heard from so many people that you are a Pinterest pro. Your name always comes up when we start talking about Pinterest on the podcast. Can you share a few of the strategies that are working for you right now when it comes to Pinterest?
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, it's content. And even more so now because Pinterest is finally starting to make some changes that they call smart feed, where they are, instead of just showing everything that comes onto people's feeds, they're selecting some things over other things and weighing things more heavily. And that has definitely made a difference. But I think it always comes down to content and having really, 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 really fantastic content on your site. I like to say that the secret behind Pinterest is always having a perfect pin for every blog post. And the perfect pin has three elements, and the first is content. It has to be fantastic content. And fantastic content does two things. It helps the reader solve a problem, and it makes the reader want to read right now. So you have to have that sense of urgency, and you have to solve a problem for a reader. And it doesn't have to be like world hunger. It can be like how to solve a greasy hair problem or something, you know. it can be something little and insignificant. But even if you look at it like in terms of, well, you think, I'm a food blogger, all I post is recipes, how is that going to help the reader solve a problem? Well, you're solving the problem of what's for dinner. And so how can you present that in a way where you let the reader know what the problem is? You know, I need to figure something out fast. Well, then say that. And then you're creating a sense of urgency that makes the reader want to read right now. So the second element of the perfect pin is, of course, your graphics and your images. Those have to be really, really good. Pinterest is visual, and a lot of times people think that Pinterest is just about having a good picture, and it is and it isn't. Your picture is kind of your cover. It's the thing that's going to grab people's attention, but if the content is not great, then they're probably not going to want to keep reading. So the image is important, but it's only one third of the equation. And then the description, that is the third element of the perfect pin. And that's the part that a lot of people forget. They'll just put the post title in their description box instead of finding a way to really draw the reader in and make them want to read. So your description has to be compelling, and it has to explain the problem that you're solving and explain why your reader needs to read it right now. So if you have a great image that catches someone's eye, your description is what's going to actually make them click on the article and come visit your blog. So all three of those things work together. So that's Pinterest in a nutshell.
That's some great Pinterest advice. So clearly you are a busy woman with the blog and writing two books in the course of basically at the same time. And your daughters are still kind of on the young side, and they were certainly very young when you started your blog. Mm-hmm. So how do you find time to fit it all in? What does a typical day look like for you?
Well, a typical day for me starts very early, usually around 4 a.m. So I get up early before anyone else is up, and I will, you know, have my cup of coffee and make my list for the day of what I need to get done, and usually have some devotional time. If I am really feeling motivated, I'll go for a run, but that doesn't always happen. And then I dive into it. I try to use that time before anybody else gets up as my eat that frog time. So I try to work on my big projects and my, you know, my long-term projects. That's my best writing time. So I will work on books during that time, or I will work on any other sort of big projects that we have going on, any sort of content that I can be creating during that time. And then my husband usually gets up around 7, and then he wakes the girls up. And then from 7 to 8, I try to have that be my help my husband get the kids ready for school time, because that's the chaos hour for us. And my husband is great. He's a stay-at-home dad, and he is amazing. And I'm so, so lucky to have him be, you know, the second half and to our family, because he's the one who keeps everything running at home for us. And having a stay-at-home parent is such a luxury. And I really honestly feel like we are so, so blessed just to be able to have him be able to focus on all the details that I would just kind of forget, because I, you know, there's only so many hours in the day to do everything. So he'll make the lunches and make breakfast for the girls, and I'll try to help them get dressed and brush their teeth and get their shoes on and pack up their backpacks and all that kind of stuff. And so that's our chaotic time. And then they go to school. My husband brings them to school, and then I go back to work. And then I usually will work again from about 8:30 till maybe 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon, depending on what I have going on. Sometimes it's a little longer, sometimes it's a little shorter. And then in the evenings and the weekends, I try to keep that reserved for family time. So I skipped over a lot of stuff, but
that completely answers the question. Okay. Was your husband always a stay-at-home dad, or
no?
Is this a new change?
He's been home since early 2013. I think April of 2013, he left his job to be a stay-at-home dad. So he was, before that, he was an aerospace engineer. So he designed airplanes. And then the blog got to a point finally where it was so busy that we knew something had to give. Our family life was crazy, because I was running my business and taking care of the kids, and I was homeschooling at the time too, and it was pretty insane. So we decided we needed to make some big changes, and you know, that was a little bit scary, because at the time my blog was doing okay, but it wasn't like making so much money where you'd think, oh well, that's a no-brainer. But you know, we are debt-free, so we own our house free and clear, and we don't have any car payments or anything like that. So that, you know, that makes life a lot easier when you're debt-free. You have a lot more freedom and flexibility. And we had some investments that were pay a little bit of money every month. We have a rental house, and then we have a couple other investments. So we knew that we could make it without going into financial ruin or something like that. But it was still a pretty big leap of faith to kind of take that jump and realize, okay, we're going to do this now. Like, this is serious. But as soon as he came home and I was able to focus 100% of my energy on the blog and my business, it was amazing. It grew so fast and so much faster than it could have ever grown before that, just because I was able to actually focus. And now I have, you know, I have a whole team working for me now. I have two full-time assistants that are in office with me, and then I have a lot of contract people who work for me as well. And I was just me at the time when my husband quit.
That's wonderful to hear. I love that story. And I have to say that I'm looking up to you in that way, because I'm hoping that I can bring my husband home from his job in a few more years. So we'll see. I've told him your story too, because I had read about your husband being an aerospace engineer in, I think maybe it was just on your blog, your about page, but he's a fighter jet pilot. So
oh, wow.
I was looking at that going like, this is like, you know, kind of similar. Like, I can bring you home from doing that and you can be home with the kids. And yeah, and he's very, the good news is he's very encouraging. So
oh, that's great.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Well, it's, you know, it's one of those things where it feels so scary and daunting when you do it. And then, you know, sometimes you just have to take that leap anyways. But we are very glad, especially my husband. He hated his job. He did it for 30 years and he hated every single minute of it. And so he loves being a stay-at-home dad now. I can't even imagine him doing anything else. He is such a good dad. Like, he's a much better dad than I am a mom. I will say that. Like, I'm a good mom, but I'm like, come on, we got to hurry. We got to do this. We got to do this. And I've always got like 10,000 things going on and multitasking to the extreme. And he just like sits and plays games with our kids and has so much patience with them when it comes to homework and everything, that he's a really great dad.
Sounds like you found a great system that works for your family.
Absolutely.
And it's neat you've been able to be so flexible through the years with different roles in your family. So that sounds wonderful. As we wrap up, do you have any funny or adorable mom moments that you could share with us?
I knew you were going to ask that question. And and my assistant Natalie's like, well, tell the one that happened this weekend. So my husband and I, we're very excited because we have guests coming this week for Thanksgiving, which is the first time anyone from my family has ever come down to Florida. My whole family lives in Washington State, so it's a really big deal. So we're having family for Thanksgiving this year. So we've been like working like crazy for like 6 months trying to do these projects in our house. And my husband's been building this outdoor kitchen in the backyard. And he's built it all himself, all, you know, by hand, and which is great. And he's an engineer, so it's really, really sturdy and solid. But it's also very, like, it's like the, whatever, the Taj Mahal of outdoor kitchens, I think, because he's just, you know, everything has to be perfect. And so it took a lot longer than we thought it was going to. So now we're, like, in crunch time trying to get everything done. And we were staining the back patio on Sunday or Saturday. And so we had told our girls, like, you stay in the house. You can't come outside. Don't come outside. The paint's wet. And my five-year-old, she opens the door and we're outside. And we're like, no, no, don't come out here. Don't come out here. The paint's wet. And it's like, okay. So she closes the door again. Then she opens the door to ask another question. And, of course, the second time she opened the door, the dog goes running out through the paint, and we're like, no, no, don't let the dog out. And so it's my five-year-old daughter. She's like, I don't know what to do. So then she opens the door even wider. So the dog, because we're screaming, the dog freaks out and turns around and runs back in the house with the wet paint all over her paws, all over the house. Luckily, we have like tile floor, so it did all come off, thank goodness. But oh my goodness, there was wet dog, white dog paw prints all over our house.
Oh,
so that was my funny mommy moment this weekend. Of course, when you're trying to do everything like fast at the last minute, it all turns into a fiasco.
That sounds like a big mess. I I would imagine. I was just picturing carpet. I'm so glad you have tiles.
Oh, yeah.
That could have ended completely differently, but yeah, oh, no. But still.
Florida is yeah, no carpet. Carpet is very rare. Tile floors is usually the norm here.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today, Ruth. This was a ton of fun, and you just shared some incredible advice with us. You were so just open and friendly. And as we wrap up, can you tell everyone, I mean, I know we know your website, but if you want to share your website and anywhere else where our listeners can find you?
Sure. My website is livingwellspendingless.com, and that's where you'll find money-saving tips and the adventure of finding the good life on a budget. Or if you're interested in blogging or learning more about blogging, you can visit my blogging site at eliteblogacademy.com.
Great. Thank you so much. We really do appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, you guys. This was great.
I know I say this pretty much every outro, but I really enjoyed that episode. It was lots of fun, and I certainly learned something new. I hope you did too. We really talked about a lot of great books early on in the episode. I don't know about you, but I feel like there are so many different books I want to read, but I feel like heading into January, I have a lot on my plate, and I don't want to put off reading these books, but there's only so much time. Then it dawned on me, Sarah, you have Audible. Just listen to some of these books while you're folding laundry and doing the dishes, and then you'll be able to read them and fit it in and have the time for it. Great idea, Sarah. If you don't have Audible, you can give Audible a try and get a free book with them if you go to audibletrial.com/brilliantbusinessmoms. You get a free 30-day trial of Audible, which includes one free book, and Ruth's new book, Living Well, Spending Less, 12 Secrets to the Good Life, is available on Audible. Also, some of the other books that we discussed in the episode, Eat That Frog is available on Audible, Pro Blogger is available on Audible, as is The Power of Habit is available on Audible. That's what I love about Audible. I can read books and take in information while I'm doing things around the house. It doesn't have to feel like reading a book that I'm interested in doesn't have to feel like one more thing on the to-do list when I can listen to it in Audible. So give it a try. Like I said, audibletrial.com/brilliantbusinessmoms. You can try it free for 30 days and get a free book. And you can pick Ruth's book or the other ones that we discussed. Or any other one that you would like to read. You don't have to pick one of the books we've discussed on the podcast. For the show notes from this episode, just head on over to brilliantbusinessmoms.com/62 and you'll find all the show notes and links and everything we discussed in this episode there. I hope you're having a great day. Now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.